Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Behind the Case, an ACG Case Reports Journal podcast. We have an exciting case discussion lined up today. We will be discussing a case series of endoscopic full cystic resection, or EFTR, in patients with inflammatory bowel disease. I am Dushyant Singhdaya, an associate editor for ACG Case Reports Journal and a second-year GI fellow at the University of Kansas Medical Center here in Kansas City. I'm honored to be joined today by our special guest, Dr. Amit Rastogi, who is a professor of medicine and therapeutic endoscopist at the University of Kansas Medical Center. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Rastogi.
Thank you, Dushyant, for having me. It's a privilege and an honor. I'm excited to do this.
Thank you. Before we dive into the case, I want to give all of our listeners a bit of background on EFTR and what the procedure entails. So EFTR is a novel technique for resecting challenging colorectal lesions. The procedure uses an over-the-scope clip device, or a VESCO, to secure two serosal surfaces on clip deployment and then resection of the lesion above the serosal closure with a snare. Because of a favorable safety profile, it has become an effective tool in the arsenal of advanced endoscopists as an alternative to surgery for selective benign and malignant colorectal lesion. So let's dive straight into this very interesting case series. So this is a single institution case series consisting of five patients with Mayo Zero ulcerative colitis who underwent EFTR for challenging colonic polyps. The patients included in this case series were considered unsuitable for conventional endoscopic resection techniques. Hence, a decision was made to pursue with EFTR. The mean age of the patient was 66.4 years with a standard deviation of 6.8 years. Three of these patients were men, and two of these patients were women. From a polyp location perspective, three of the polyps were located in the descending colon, one in the rectum, and one in the transverse colon. The average size of the polyp was 25 millimeters with a standard deviation of 5 millimeters. The procedure was completed successfully in all patients, and the authors did not report any major or minor adverse events or complications. A histopathological examination confirmed full thickness resection in all cases, indicating successful removal of all of these polyps. The authors then performed a surveillance colonoscopy at an average of 7.8 months with a standard deviation of 4.5 months after the index colonoscopy. On surveillance colonoscopy, they did not note any polyp recurrence. So this case highlights EFTR as a new treatment modality for resection of colorectal polyps in patients with IBD due to a high technical success rate and ability to perform full thickness resection and no postoperative complications and polyp recurrence. However, the authors did note some limitations in their study. For example, the mean size of the lesion was 25 millimeters, and similar to previously published literature, EFTR may only be the ideal approach in smaller colorectal lesions. The generalizability of the case series may also be limited to specific patients. And number three, there was no long-term follow-up. So let's talk to our expert, Dr. Rastogi, about the EFTR procedure. Dr. Rastogi, can you talk about EFTR in a step-by-step manner and the techniques that you use in your practice for EFTR?
Yeah, sure, Dushyant. So a nice summary of this study. So basically, EFTR, which is endoscopic full thickness resection, we use the full thickness resection device that has become available over the last several years to do this procedure. The first step, obviously, is to recognize the lesion of interest and to decide whether you're going to use the FTRD and perform an EFTR on that lesion. There's a process of loading the device, which we can go through later as to how you attach it to the scope. There's a little bit of a learning involved with that, and you have to have good assistants who can help you to do that. But the basic principles of the technique and the resection are that after you load the device, you get to the lesion. Prior to that, actually, I should take a step back. Once you decide that a lesion is a candidate for FTRD, you should mark the lesion with cautery. And usually marking is done in a way that you have a little bit of a margin of normal mucosa around the lesion, 2 to 3 millimeters, preferably at least, so that it's identified easily when you go in with the loaded device. So after you load the FTRD, you get to the lesion. There is a grasping forceps that comes with the device, which you pass through the biopsy channel, and it is used to grasp the lesion and bring it into the cap. Once you are sure that the entire lesion is inside the cap, and that's where the cautery helps you, because if you can see all the cautery marks in the tissue which is inside the cap, you are pretty sure that you've got the entire lesion within the cap or inside the cap. That's when you ask your assistant, the second assistant, to close the snare, and you use cautery to basically cut the lesion out. Then with resected lesion still in the grasping forceps, you withdraw the scope out. After you withdraw the scope out, it's always essential to go back again and look at the site to make sure that there is no perforation, no bleeding, and the clip is in good position to ensure a safety. So those are basic steps.
Perfect. Yeah, those are some very insightful, things to watch out for. So a follow-up question to that. So what are the primary indications for EFTR, and how do you determine if a colonic polyp needs, conventional EMR ESD versus EFTR?
Yeah, sure. So basically in the colon, this technique should be utilized for lesions that are scarred down. So, the common example or the usual case scenario is a patient had a large polyp that was removed by someone, and they did not remove the whole polyp. There's some residual scarred down polyp remaining at the site. That's a good indication for EFTR. Any polyp that does not lift again due to submucosal fibrosis would be a candidate lesion. Any polyp that has, or any lesion that has early cancer where you would like to have an on-block resection so that the pathologist can give you an exact histopathological staging as to how deep the cancer is going into the submucosa, so on and so forth, would be a good lesion. Other candidate lesions are subepithelial lesions, which can be removed with EFTR. So these are the different types of lesions that you can use this device on. One of the caveats is that there is a limitation in the size that you can remove with the FTRD. Usually, anything less than 2 to 3 centimeters. Definitely not more than 3 centimeters. Also depends on the bulk of the lesion, but the usual size limitation is up to 2 to 3 centimeters. So those are the types of lesions that we can the FTRD device for full thickness resection. Another indication is polyps that are going into the appendix, that this device can be used. It's an option. The other option obviously would be an appendectomy. So if it's a polyp going into the appendix and you can't access the entirety of the polyp, then EMR becomes difficult, if not impossible. And in that case, you could use this device. And also if the polyp is going into a diverticulum, it can become risky just doing an endoscopic resection of these lesions that are going into a diverticulum. And we can use the FTRD for that too.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And kind of keeping in line with the case report series that was published, most of the lesions that the authors had were 25 millimeter with a standard deviation of 5. Could you please also talk about how EFTR may be a better approach than conventional ESD or EMR for colonic polyps, particularly in ulcerative colitis patients?
I don't know whether we can say that yet. There are no studies comparing these modalities in colonic polyps, actually, and more so not, definitely not in ulcerative colitis patients. But one thing which is true for these polyps, flat polyps in patients who have IBD in ulcerative colitis or Crohn's colitis, is that there will be submucosal scarring. There's usually some submucosal scarring, and these lesions are very flat. So that combination of flat lesions, which are not very bulky and have submucosal scarring, make them an attractive candidate for using the EFTR technique. Although there is no good data to suggest whether this is better than ESD versus conventional EMR, I think there is some reason to at least use these techniques or think of these of this technique for lesions, specifically in IBD, especially if some of these lesions are small in size, they're not very big. So they're subtle in appearance, they're flat, they're not bulky, there's some mucosal scarring some in some of them, as well as the size is not very big. So, I mean, they make they are good candidates, or at least, and especially if they are in the left side of the colon, which is easier, because you have to understand that once you load the device, sometimes accessing lesions in the right colon can be difficult and cumbersome. Although there is no good data comparing whether this is better than ESG or EMR, but I think something to consider when you're faced with lesions in colitis patients.
Interesting. That's very interesting to know, especially for, you know, those right-sided lesions. So what is the recurrence rate after EFTR, and what do you think are factors that influence it? And what has your experience been like with polyp recurrence after EFTR in your practice?
We don't have good data to tell us how what the recurrence rate is. And I think the factors that influence is probably lesion-related factors as well as the technical aspect, technical competence. So, I mean, you know, there's a learning curve to using this device. I mean, it's probably not as long as ESD, but you still have to have some learning, some experience. The factors that I would think would impact the recurrence or residual rate would be the size of the lesion, how confident or how good were we in getting the entire lesion inside the cap. I think that's the key. If I had to talk about one thing that is the most important part or step or the rate limiting step, is the ability to get the entire lesion into the cap. That needs a little bit of maneuvering, a little bit of practice and a technical expertise. So if you don't get the entire lesion into the cap, you will have some residual at the time of follow-up. So if it is done expertly, I would say the residual rate should be less than 10%, but we don't know. Not much data has been published. But in my opinion, when the size and the bulk of the lesion can determine it, as well as the technical competence in getting grasping the lesion with the tissue grasper and getting it into the cap, how good are we in doing that? Or were we in doing that for that specific lesion, will determine the recurrence, or I should say residual rate on follow-up.
So if there is polyp recurrence after EFTR, how do you manage that? Are there any nuanced techniques that you particularly use during a repeat colonoscopy?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And again, very limited data, if any, to tell us what we should do and how we should approach this. So my rule of thumb is, because there's sometimes a variability in how long that clip, that over-the-scope clip that you have deployed, will stay at the site of the resection, I usually do an X-ray, a plain X-ray of the abdomen, KUB, in about 6 months. And if the clip has passed out, that's when we repeat the procedure. Because if the clip is still there at the site, it'll be difficult to assess if there is any residual lesion there. And even if you can assess it, it'll be difficult to remove it. So I wait for the clip to dislodge. Once the clip is dislodged, I go in and take a look at the lesion. And then, you know, there are a variety of techniques you can use. I mean, obviously, you could, depending on, you know, the location and the size, you could use another FTRD and do a full thickness resection. Sometimes, you know, you can use other techniques, like if it's very small residual at the site, you can use a hot biopsy forceps and use the hot avulsion technique. Underwater EMR can be used, you know. So those accessory techniques that we use for residual recurrent lesions or adenomas in the colon otherwise can again be used here. No good data to suggest is there any you know recommended way, but I think it's case by case basis.
That's very good to know. So switching gears here a little bit more, what do you see as the most common complications associated with EFTR?
Thankfully, the safety profile has been good. The complication rate that have been reported in the literature have been around 10% or less. Mainly, it's the same usual complications that we experience with endoscopic resections, like perforation, which is about 1-2% reported in the literature, bleeding about up to 5%. You can have post-polypectomy syndrome, obviously local recurrence at the site, if you can count that as a complication, although nothing acutely. But those are the common complications that we experience, no different from what we would experience with other techniques like EMR or ESD.
Sure. And the authors also in their paper noted that they did not have any, you know, acute or long-term complications with the procedure. So what are some of the best practices for minimizing risk and managing the complications during or after the procedure?
Yeah, so a little bit of training, obviously, thinking of not only the endoscopist, but also the staff. Because remember, you have to have well-trained staff because loading the device takes a few minutes. So you have to have two assistants with you to help with the procedure, because one of them will be handling the grasping forceps or the grasper, and the other one will be handling the snare. You have to have them well-trained in assembling the device over the scope. That's very important to have the device assembled properly over the scope. Otherwise, deploying the clip and doing the procedure will become very difficult and may not even work. The other thing to minimize the risk is, the main thing that we have to remember is the sequence that we do. Identify the lesion, mark it, pass the scope with the device, grasp the lesion, pull it into the cap. And here the key is that you want to make sure that you deploy the clip before you ask your second assistant to close the snare and you press the pedal on the cartridge. The key here is there is a white band on the cap that you will see move forward as you turn the wheel at the biopsy channel to deploy the clip. As the white band goes forward and comes and moves towards the edge of the cap, that will give you the indication that, yes, the clip has been deployed. And only then should you ask your second assistant to close the snare, and then you press the cautery pedal to cut it out. Like, the worst complication that you can have will be a perforation here, and that usually happens when you've turned the dial, the hand wheel, but the clip did not deploy. And you just assume that the clip deployed without making sure that that white band has, and you didn't see the white band move forward. But in your rush, in your, you know, the middle of the procedure, you think that, oh, you've deployed the clip, and you ask your assistant to close the snare. And then what will happen is you would have had a full thickness resection without the clip closing that area. So basically like a perforation. And the second thing is, obviously, inspecting the site, right? So you do what you had to do, you resected the lesion, you come out, then you go back and always inspect the site to make sure there is no bleeding or perforation. And then if there is, then you treat it the regular way. There's no difference in treating these complications in this scenario than otherwise.
Are there any other emerging indications for EFTR beyond its current clinical applications?
Yeah, so we talked about the common indications, right? So scarred lesions that don't lift with conventional EMR techniques, with underlying fibrosis, recurrent lesions, which will be scarred down, subepithelial lesions, lesions which have early cancer because you need an on-block resection. Others that have been where this has been used is appendiceal lesions, although we need more data for that, and lesions going into a diverticulum. There's not much data on esophageal lesions. So, I mean, we have a gastroduodenal FTRD also available now, which came out after the colonic FTRD, but it has been used mostly for the stomach, sometimes for the duodenum. But I've used it for a couple of indications in the esophagus just for some submucosal lesions, which otherwise would need more complex techniques like submucosal tunneling and endoscopic resection. So I've used it in the esophagus, but there's not much published data for the esophagus. And then obviously, we have to have more studies comparing this technique to other techniques like, you know, ESD or hybrid ESD, and obviously conventional EMR with ancillary techniques like cap suction technique or hot avulsion, which have been used for scarred down lesions. So those are some of the emerging data and the future direction where we need to go with this.
So what is one take-home message that you would like to give to our listeners who, you know, either regularly perform EFTR or they see EFTR being performed on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think training is very important. I think training of the staff as well as the endoscopists, because there's a little bit of learning involved. I mean, a lot of endoscopists have been using over-the-scope clip. So this is a little more complex than just using over-the-scope clip because the assembly is a little more complicated. You need two assistants, so you have to have trained staff. One of the things that I forgot to mention in the safety is there is a safety lock in the snare because the snare is integrated within the, it's an open snare integrated within the cap in a groove. So if the snare is inadvertently closed before you have the lesion inside the cap and you haven't deployed the clip, then you can't use it back again because you can't open it and get it into the groove. So that safety lock has to be there on the snare to prevent it from accidentally deploying until you are ready to cut the lesion because you have just gotten it into the cap and you've deployed the clip. So those are the technical things that your staff need to know also, and training on ex vivo model is important for this. Start with easy cases, which one indication which I forgot to mention is for full thickness resection of the rectal wall for diagnosing, for example, Hirschsprung's disease. So this is the simplest of the cases where you just have to get into the rectum to take an area about 5 centimeters above the dentate line and grasp the wall, the mucosa, get the entire wall into the cap and cut it to get a full thickness resection or full thickness biopsy of the rectal wall to assess for the plexus, the myenteric plexus. So that those are easy cases, and that would be my recommendation to people who are starting, or endoscopists who are starting this, to try those first, get used to the device, how we use it, the subtle techniques, nuances of using it, the different parts of the device, how they're used, to get the assistants, your nurse or your techs to get comfortable with that before you start taking on more challenging cases.
See, perfect. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Rastogi, for joining us. You know, it's been an honor to have you and you sharing some of the insights and, you know, some of the important procedural aspects. So it's been a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Dushan. I enjoyed this.
All right. And to all our listeners, thank you very much for tuning in, and stay tuned for our next podcast next month. Thank you.